We want to talk to you a little bit about advancing the voice of community health workers through the use of CBPR, primarily because, you know, there's a lot of energy and interest in CHWs emerging now. And as a result of that interest, a lot of people are interested in defining and describing and regulating the role of CHWs. And some states have made significant errors by not including the voice of CHWs in these practices and in regulating their own practices, and have had significant effect on the character of the work and how the work is viewed in community. And so as those energies started to coalesce in New York State, we took on some efforts to really use CBPR to collect the voices of CHWs to inform the development of standards and regulations. We have no financial relationships to disclose. So over the years, I mean, in more recent years, community health workers are increasingly being included as members of healthcare teams, including models for patient-centered medical homes, healthy homes initiatives, chronic disease management models, and many other models that are being implemented to try to improve health outcomes. And yet, in spite of all of this interest, there really isn't any consensus on exactly who CHWs are. It's sort of like we hire CHWs and then employers are pretty much at liberty to decide what their roles and what their tasks are going to be. And so that was one of the issues that was facing us and that we wanted to address. Because without a real clear identity and scope of work, it's really difficult to develop sustainable models. And it's really difficult to include CHWs in healthcare teams if they don't have a discrete and concrete scope of practice. Let me just say very quickly that there have been numerous attempts to really hammer out a CHW definition and to identify their roles. I would point more specifically to the last one where the community health worker section here at APHA, I was chair of that section 3 years ago. And as chair, I made it part of my platform to really hammer out a national definition for CHWs because we have such global representation at this organization. And so we did hammer that out and acknowledging that the Department of Labor was accepting applications for new job categories, that's something they only do every 10 years, once every 10 years. But acknowledging that they were going to do that for the 2010 census, we submitted that national definition to them for inclusion as a unique standard occupational category. And after much, much battling, they did finally approve that. And in 2009, in January of 2009, the Executive Office of the President published the new listing of standard occupational categories for use in the 2010 census, and community health workers were included in that listing. So what we have learned in I'm going to skip that other one. Well, we have learned. So in doing our CBPR work, we've learned a lot of things, a couple of things about CHWs. And these are, by the way, we did surveys, we did a number of research instruments, we did key informant interviews, in-depth interviews, we did a bunch of stuff. And what we found out is that how CHWs define themselves really varies quite a bit. Many CHWs we found identify with their job title, but they don't really identify themselves as part of a practice. So they see themselves as part of an organization or maybe even part of a program, but not necessarily part of a profession, of a practice. We also found great variability in the roles that are ascribed to CHWs. Again, as I said before, employers feel pretty much at liberty to assign whatever roles they think are appropriate for these workers. We also found out that there's a huge difference between the value CHWs assign to some roles and the value that their employer assigns to those roles. So the employer, for example, might be more interested in recruitment and screening, while the CHW might be more interested in informal counseling and interpretation and accompaniment and social support. We found a wide gap there. And so consensus on what this identity and what the roles of CHWs are really needs to build, we found, on CHW roles, because Because of who they are and how they're viewed in community, you really can't impose something on them that's going to change that character, and because that's why we seek them out. We seek them out specifically because they have this unique access to community. So if we then seek them out for that, because they're different from us and they look different from us and they speak differently from us, and that gains them that access, then we can't bring them in and make them look like us then. It kind of defeats the purpose of why we sought them out initially anyway. So I want to just say very quickly that this project originally started when the New York State Department of Health came to Dr. Finley and said, you know, we have a lot of CHWs in the state of New York hired by the health department, and we want to create a standard training. You know, the health department likes to have things be standard, you know. So we want to create a standard training for them, and we want it to be web-based. And here's some money. And Dr. Finley said, well, wait a minute. I got to talk to the CHWs about that. We got to find out if that would even work. I don't know if it would work. And so she came to the CHW network, and we had a lot of discussion, and we decided, the CHW voices said, you know, we don't really learn from web-based models. That's just not the way we learn. We learn from experience and discovery. You know, we're adults. We're non-traditional adult learners. So we said, okay. So we went back, Sally went back to the health department and said, you know, CHWs are telling us this probably isn't really appropriate. But what they are telling us is that they're having a lot of trouble figuring out who they are and what it is they do. And so could I spend this money to try to address that, to try to develop the CHW identity, you know, using rigorous scientific research methods, CVPR, and through her courage, completely redirected these funds that would have just literally been wasted. And so I'm going to turn it over to Sally Findley to take it from here. Thank
you. Thanks, Sergio. So what we then did is, in the network, there are various committees, and there's a research committee. And working with that research committee, we started, it's a very iterative process, but we sort of started the whole process of investigating and listening to CHWs, and also soliciting views from the employers, so that we could start to come together on what is a consensus view. And as you can see in this slide, we had to get IRB approval, and we had a three sort of major series of focus groups and key informant interviews, which involved roughly 40 CHWs and over a series of 14 different conversations. We did web-based and like regular fill out the piece of paper surveys at conferences and network meetings. In 2008, we were able to hear back from 103 community health workers and 21 employers. We then went over those results, discussed them, and then in 2010, we expanded it with some more questions. So today, we're just going to go through what some of those things are. Did I click here? Yes. So who is the CHW? As Sergio said, this definition really, to be something that CHWs own in the state of New York, it has to feel good for New Yorkers. So in New York, the definition emphasized frontline public health professionals, very important, the trusted members of the communities they serve, and that they bridge gaps. And so that became, as Sergio said, the basis for the APHA definition. Now, what makes you a CHW? That we got from the surveys. And we see that here there are most of the things that are included in sort of the major activities that people do involve advocacy, the cultural bridging, referral, informal counseling. But you see at the far right there that assisting in health insurance and performing translation and medical interpretation, they didn't think that was really that critical, despite the fact at the National Cancer Institute, those are big factors in the patient navigator role that they're called to fulfill. Now, we also wanted to get different perceptions on what is most important to CHW. So we asked them, what do you think is important for the people that you work with? And again, you see here that the things that involve trust and bridging community, health education, all of these things on the left-hand side are very, they said, these are very important to people. The things on the far right, supporting patient-centered medical homes, increasing medication and regimen and adherence, lower priority to what they think is valuable for clients. Then we ask, okay, what do you think the program wants? Is anybody surprised that there's a difference here? The CHWs thought that the program really didn't care about the fact that they value, that people value trust. So you can see right now that this dialectic is starting to get set up between what the CHWs think people, what they're hearing back from people that's important to them, and what they think their employers want. And you can see even there, the retention of clients, that was low priority to the people, but they think employers really valued it. Well, then we asked the employers. So here is a very interesting part of this, is there's a difference in perception. The employers still say, oh yeah, that trust is important. Oh, that health education is important. And you can see here that some of those purple things where they thought the CHWs don't feel valued by the program says, oh yeah, we do value that. So there's really a conversation then that is where CBPR has a very important role to continue to further this dialect. So we want to use the findings from these surveys now to go back to the CHW networks, to our Leadership Advisory Council, to reinforce and affirm the similarities in these valued roles, clarify how CHWs support the goals of the program so CHWs and employers can be sort of on the same page for what is important. There's a whole issue here that emerges when you look at this about the intensity of service. Is it because CHWs provide this very in-depth understanding, informal counseling, or is it more getting out in the community, sort of that outreach? There's a tension there that we need to further explore. And then the whole concept of CHW contributions. It's sort of still kind of a black box, and if it's just a question of retention, that's not the same thing as what motivates the CHWs and what they think people value. So we then proceeded to look at the various specific roles that are involved in the scope of practice. And we started with the 7 basic roles that the lay National Community Health Advisor study outlined. And we heard from the network in the 2007 focus groups that really it sort of goes down between core competency skills and problem-specific skills. And then in 2010, we had further clarification about what those skills were: interpersonal, communication, teaching, and organizational. So I'm going to go very quickly through the slides. We asked CHWs and the employers 2008 and 2009. And so you see here that these interpersonal skills are very important, except for the bilingual. And they're very important in roughly the same measures for both the CHWs and the employers. You see, in fact, for a little bit of these skills, the employers say this is more important. When you get into the communication skills, we start to see both that they place lower value on them, but also there are more discrepancies here between what the CHWs think should be in that scope of practice and what the employers think. When you get to the teaching skills, here you see CHWs place more value on their role in role modeling and communicating than the employers do. And when you get down to the organizational skills, you continue to see this sort of differential and also generally lower value. So what do we do with this? We have to agree on what the decision criteria are. And that's not something that either the employers can do or the CHWs. This is, again, a dialectic where we have to go back to both groups and talk about what should we do with this, these responses. Should it be 50%? And that's where PPR is so important to set those, make those decisions collectively, review the skill categories. Maybe it's possible that the discrepancies are because the way we ask the questions, they are not tapping into the same things. So we have to prepare a set of priorities, 1 and 2, for the scope of practice. So we had then more discussions that I'm not going to have time to present today about the training versus scope of practice. But one of the things that did come out of this is people have very mixed feelings about certification. there's a great deal of advantages that people think in terms of recognition for the value of CHW work that comes through, gives CHWs an identity, but there are disadvantages too in having, it could exclude potentially the best CHWs, it may reduce cultural diversity. So as we move ahead from defining the scope of practice and working out the training standards and credentials, this is again an area that we want to continue to have that dialogue. But we want to also remember that right now the majority of CHWs do in fact favor some kind of certification, and they would in fact take a test. They don't want that test to be one of your standard ones, but they do want to have something that can allow them to be valued as a CHW, as a professional fulfilling those trusted roles. So our findings suggest that it's very important that that training tap into those more comprehensive sets of skills for the interpersonal skills, some of the communication skills, less of the problem-specific and medical content in terms of the core scope of practice. And that most CHWs are still waiting to work out what will be a credential that will work for both the CHWs and the employers. It's not perfect what we've done, and we still have more work to do to try to bring it together. But we think that this CBR process has really helped to give CHWs greater insight into the views of the employers, and the employers greater view insight into the view of the CHW. So in effect, the CBPR is functioning in the same way that the CHWs function within their programmatic context. It is bridging between the different viewpoints. And we will keep you posted on where we go with this in New York as we move ahead to try to build a statewide program for training, certification, and funding. Thank you.